Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by the Commissioner of Insurance for the state of Louisiana, Tim Temple. He visits with us periodically, and we appreciate same. Tim, welcome to the show, and Happy New Year to you.
Hey, Happy New Year, Newell, and Happy Friday.
Absolutely. Tim, I wanted to start relative to what's going on in California. I guess you've been looking at this from afar, and obviously a lot of eerily similar things. Us hurricanes, them, the fire. Your thoughts about what you're seeing and hearing?
Obviously everybody's watching the fires, which continue to burn, as of today. And, one thing that people of Louisiana can certainly do with people, other U.S. citizens experience these catastrophic events is, we can sympathize and we can empathize because Mother Nature throws a lot of things at us. But, with regards to these fires, it's certainly, the insurance world is looking at it. The reinsurance world is paying attention. I think the last number I saw, they're projecting somewhere between $30 to $40 billion in preliminary damages right now. But one thing I think that listeners need to know is they're again preliminary, but it looks like it's breaking out to about 60% of that would be residential property, 30% of that. Commercial property and business interruption and other lines of business, and about 10% potentially for auto claims, vehicles that are burned up and destroyed during these fires. So, $30 to $40 billion, and again, that's preliminary, is a lot of money by any standards. But in the insurance world and the reinsurance world, it is manageable because that's what those companies are in the business to do. And so we're keeping an eye on it. Everybody keeps asking, what's this going to do to Louisiana rates? And first and foremost, it's way too early to tell. But I can tell you that the reinsurance market is very resilient. It's there's hundreds of billions of dollars of capacity in the reinsurance market. So, let's wait and see what happens before we start saying the sky's falling, and focus on things that we can control, which is to mitigate against future damages. And I think you're going to see California have conversations about that. If you're going to live in an area that's prone to wildfires, then as you rebuild, you may have to rebuild with different building materials, fire resistant. You may have to do setbacks. Make sure that brush and grass is further away from your structures. Just like in Louisiana, we're starting with, we've got the fortified roof program. We elevate homes. We're doing things to mitigate damages from the perils, the risk that we have in our state. I think California is about to enter a time where they're going to start talking about that.
Interestingly, some of the same things that you cautioned us about when you restricted the manner in which insurance companies operate, bad things kind of happen. And it seems as though when you look back over the last 5 years in California, they became very more restrictive and placing mandatory requirements on insurance companies. And the response was, well, then we're out, because the risk that you're asking me to take on, I can't charge the appropriate premium. There's no way for me to make a profit in with this landscape that you've created. And when you look into Palisades, they were saying that State Farm, as just an individual company, canceled 60 to 70% of their policies. And they're not the only one. There are many others that were right there standing with them. And, you know, they went to their FAIR plan, our Citizens plan.
Right. Yeah. And no, look, you know, and I did. I've been talking about, you know, creating that regulatory and legal environment where companies can thrive, while at the same time making sure that you protect consumers' interest. And that's a balance. If you do one, if you lean too heavy on one way, then the other person's going to get unjustly injured and vice versa. So, you know, you've got to strike a balance there. But, you know, this in California back in, I think it was 1988, they passed, it was called Proposition 3. And it was a very heavy-handed regulatory framework. And, you know, I've been reading with interest some of the comments that, you know, that you see on social media and online, and even the reporters are talking about on TV. You know, you had these $4 and $5 million homes, and their annual premium was $4,000, $5,000. I mean, you know, we have people, our fellow citizens have homes that are $200,000, and their premiums are way higher than that right now. So it created this environment where I think, you know, you had the premium didn't match the risk. And that's where we've got to talk about things again. You know, the regulation and the legislation, we're dealing with that, and we'll continue to improve that. But we've also got to make sure that we do what we can to build structures that are going to be more resilient to future events. We're always going to be threatened with hurricanes in Louisiana. We need to talk about, you know, more fortified roof, more stringent building codes, because we're not going to move. I don't want people to have to move from our state or move from the coast. But so we need to make sure that we're building homes that are more resilient, which will help make sure that the premiums are more appropriate and not outsized or more expensive than they need to be.
I think most of our states have the same, very similar, I should say, financial scheme as the way that they finance the insurance of last resort. We call it Citizens. They call it the FAIR plan. Is that fair to say?
Yes, yes. There's, I want to say there's 30, somewhere around 30, 35 states that have a similar type of structure, a market of last resort.
Yeah. And it was interesting because one of the rule changes that was made just last year in California is that for the first $1 billion of an assessment, the companies can charge back 50% to their insureds and 100% after that. When you start looking at the number of people that are on the FAIR plan there, and this highlights what you just talked about, that delicate balance. If it's too much one way or the other way, it may sound great, but you better look at the back door, right? Because the back door could be so onerous that you just can't deal with it.
Well, and that's right. And one thing, and if you, and I know you were here, you remember, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners do, after Hurricanes Katrina and Rita in Louisiana, you know, our Citizens plan was insolvent. It did not have enough money to cover claims. Just like, you know, everything I read, it looks like the California FAIR plan is probably going to be in a similar situation. So, you know, their mechanism is they can go and assess insurance companies, which then turn around and pass it back on to us. And Louisiana, the leadership at the time there, they went and they bonded. They borrowed $1 billion or just shy of $1 billion to pay claims. And then we, all of the policyholders in Louisiana, paid a small percentage of our premium policy, our policy premium, to repay that. To right. Pay those bond off. And, you know, even last week, you know, we at the Citizens Board meeting, they had collected enough money now on that assessment that we are not going to collect that 1.36% premium surcharge on all property policies in Louisiana starting April 1st for the rest of the bond for the next 14 months. So There are other mechanisms. You can, you know, either you pass it down through the insurance companies, which turn around and pass that on to us as consumers, or you can bond it out over a very long, you know, 20-year period, which is what we did for Citizens back then, and pay it off in much smaller increments over a longer period of time.
Yeah. I mean, this is tragic what's going on. I mean, it just your heart goes out to them, you know, and we've been there. We know what it's like. A little bit of a difference. We had most of our homes we could salvage, right? There was water in them, but a lot of them were salvageable. I mean, there's nothing to salvage here.
That's right. When your home completely burns down, you lose everything. I mean, there's not even a structure left to return to. And look, we certainly have folks in Louisiana that experience losing everything when their house, right. I mean, because we do have homes that are totally destroyed, but you also have homes that are partially. But this fire is devastating to so many people. But I can tell you, you know, we're looking into, you know, I'm monitoring the marketplace, and if I think that if it raises to a level that I need to start letting people know, hey, this could impact Louisiana citizens. Policy, not Louisiana citizens, but us as consumers, you'll certainly hear me start to talk about that so we can manage expectations and set realities. But we're watching it, and we're in communication with the California Department of Insurance offering, you know, our assistance if they need it. So far, they've got they're able to manage everything, and I certainly think that they would be able to. But we nonetheless reach out and offer assistance if it's needed.
So, Tim, let's pivot to back home. What are we seeing in the insurance market for us?
Yeah, look, you know, as I've mentioned on your program and your listeners have heard either on this show or other outlets that, you know, we made some major property reform that was passed last year during the regular session. Some of those laws took effect throughout the year last year. Many of those laws didn't take effect until, you know, 17 days ago. So, but the bills that were passed, the laws that were enacted are making a difference. You know, I've mentioned to you on your program, we have companies coming in. Had conversation with one recently that's almost complete with the process, and I anticipate they'll start writing new policies here within the next 30 days, I would imagine. And they're going to be writing in South Louisiana, and they're going to be writing not just residential property, but also commercial property. So it is going to work. And, you know, again, I've read the news articles, and I've had the conversations with other elected officials that are extremely frustrated with the pace. But, you know, it's never going to happen as fast as any of us want, especially people that are facing, you know, imminent renewals. But it is working, and, you know, new companies are coming back, and companies will continue to come back. Rates, that's when people will see that downward pressure. And I speak to people every day that tell me, that have a story, that I was able to save money because I changed my insurance carrier. You know, I went and got a wind mitigation survey and realized that I had discounts on my property that I wasn't aware of. I, you know, got a fortified roof either through the grant program or voluntarily, you know, building a new construction or putting a new roof on, put one on. I mean, there's a lot of ways that people can, things that people can do to help offset these premium increases that we're in right now. And companies are going to come back. And when they do, that's when you'll see your rates go down. And let me just add, Noel, real quick, because I just saw there was just a new update on the Florida efforts there. You know, they did their reform. It was 18 months before people started seeing, you know, a change in the marketplace. And as of today, they have 9 new companies writing business. They have over $1 billion of new money, if you will, new capacity that is in their marketplace. 60% of the top 10 writers in Florida have expanded their writings in their state, and 40% of those have taken rate decrease. That's somewhere like over 2 million policyholders. So reform works. It takes a while. Like I said, Florida, it was 18 months before people started seeing a positive change, but it does work. And I think Louisiana citizens should expect to see something similar. I anticipate we'll be quicker because our market's smaller. So I think that the reform that we've enacted will take place sooner than the 18 months. But I'm just, again, I want people to, I don't want to go out and we're not selling snake oil. I want people to understand that these reforms are real. They're going to make a difference. It's going to take time. It's not as fast as I want or any of us wants, but we are on the right path.
I had a surprising personal experience, Tim. I was with Citizens year before last, and there was a big hike. So I went back to the market, and I ended up with a Lloyd's policy, non-admitted carrier, less coverage than I had with Citizens. That came up this past October. Went back to the market. Citizens was the cheapest opportunity, and I saved myself about $40-some-hundred. And I was kind of surprised. Yes. Now I know, I think Citizens is going to have an increase in 2025. I don't know if that's true. So, you know, at my next renewal, I may be back with somebody else. But, you know, it's just something that you have to do. But, you know, $4,500 or $40-some-odd-hundred is nothing to sneeze at, right?
Not at all. That's big money. But Newell, one of the things, and when, just was that this year you renewed or last year?
October of 24.
October, okay. Well, one of the things that took place in the session last year was Senator Kirk Talbot, who is chair of Insurance Committee, he had passed legislation which became law that suspended the 10% surcharge that Citizens charges on their policies because,
and
you know, by law... they have to be 10% higher than well, actually, that didn't take effect until January 1st. So I think that you'll see Citizens will be flat. I mean, the idea was, look, we don't want to encourage and promote people to go into Citizens because we don't want to get in a situation similar to what California, you know, may be experiencing now. But at the same time, it was designed to try and bring some relief to policyholders while these reforms that were passed are enacted and take effect. So, you know, there is, I think, an upside to that, you know, and the law suspended that surcharge for the next 3 years. So 25, 26 and 27. And but that's a positive for the short term to try and bring some relief to the citizens' policyholders.
Yeah, if it goes down some more, I'll be singing zippity-doo-dah.
Well, $4,500 is a lot of money, and I'm glad you were able to say that. But I would just ask your listeners to go out and, you know, look, you hear it all the time, shop your insurance. And, yes, it is. It takes effort and time, and it's work. But I think it's one of those things that you benefit from by putting that effort into it.
Let's talk auto real quick. What are we seeing there?
You know, we were able to pass some reform during the last session, during the last regular session. We had one bill that was vetoed by the governor. And, you know, we're in discussions right now on what the legislation is going to look like for the upcoming session, which starts April 14th. I would say your listeners can expect to see, you know, probably some of the similar battles, similar conversations. But we're trying to work with the stakeholders. One of the things that I have not had the opportunity to engage in with all parties when it comes to auto reform on the property side, you know, we were able to get a lot of the insurance company, the plaintiff attorneys, the consumer advocates, adjusters, business owners, homeowners, were all able to collectively come together and agree on some of the problems that were created and find some meaningful solutions. That conversation is not taking place with regards to auto reform, and we need it. There is no reason that you should be paying, and I and everybody that's listening on this phone call should be paying the highest auto rates in the country. And it's we are not that much worse a risk than California or New York or Texas or Mississippi. But yet we're paying the highest auto rates. So we've got to address that. And we've had to, you know, as I've mentioned on your program, we've had the legislative hearings, I think five now. We're going to have another one probably next month or in March. But we're talking about, you know, what's referred to as cost drivers. when you have an auto claim in Louisiana, why is it so much more expensive in our state than other states? So we're having those conversations, some of them difficult, some of them contentious, but we're having those conversations to identify why a claim is more expensive in Louisiana than it is in other states, because that's what goes into the rate making. That's the biggest component of rate, is the loss that they have to pay out. So until we can truly get people to acknowledge what the cost drivers are, I don't see us getting anywhere until we have those true, you know, those meaningful conversations. But I'm willing to sit down with anybody that wants to talk about what the cost drivers are and what we can do to bring those under control and rebalance how the claim system works here in Louisiana.
Yeah, people would much rather hear a comforting lie than an unpleasant truth. But the only thing that's going to move the needle is that unpleasant truth, right?
So. That's right. And you know, look, that's what we've got to have. And look, I would, in talking about an uncomfortable truth, if Louisianans deserved to pay the highest auto premiums, whether it's for your individual vehicle or for your company or commercial vehicle, if we deserved it, I would tell you that uncomfortable truth. But that's not the truth. So, you know, I am willing to tackle this because I think, you know, look, and one thing that I'm very excited and grateful of the hard work that the governor and the legislature took to address some other huge hurdles in our state. Crime, you know, criminal justice reform, education reform, the tax session, the special tax session they had to rebalance, you know, the tax structure and, you know, hopefully let people keep more money in their pockets. I mean, I think those things are huge game changers for the state. But we've got to make sure that we add and fix this insurance crisis on auto because, you know, all the savings that people are going to get, if it just keeps going to pay these premiums, then we're not really doing anything.
No, you're right.
So we need to make sure that we add insurance so that our state economy can, you know, I think they've done all these good things, but we got to make sure insurance is part so we can take advantage of, I think, a phenomenal economic growth opportunity that, like I said, our governor and legislature are setting the state up to benefit from.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate your time. We know you're busy and your insight, and best of luck to you. Tim Temple, Louisiana Insurance Commissioner. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Talk to you next time. Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. We'll be.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Right back. So the Plaza Tower has been an eyesore for a long time. The city was summoned into court in an attempt to stop their process as they begin to try to move this ball along to get to some demolition. J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member at large, joins us to talk about that and more. J.P., welcome to the show.
Thanks, Noel. Happy to be here.
J.P., you were in the court, so what actually happened there?
Well, what we saw was a last-minute effort to try and prevent the city from finally moving forward on the securing Plaza Tower and beginning a plan to potentially demolish it. And I will say, Newell, it was kind of fascinating because I've never seen a situation where a judge obliterated every stupid argument in real time, almost like a submachine gun mowing down like a field of enemies. Like it was pretty epic. There were two points that I think you would find particularly interesting. At one point, the individual said that the lawyer representing the Adriana Properties or Alexandria Properties said, well, Judge, you know, this tower's been vacant for a while. And the judge said, how long? And he said, about 10 years. And the judge goes, try again. He said, 15 years. And the judge goes, and then finally an associate was like, since 2002. And that right. really kind of sums up 22 years. So there are all these arguments, not good faith arguments being made about how this is not a bad owner, not a bad actor. They're trying to bring it into commerce. And when you look at the plight of Plaza Tower, the fact that pieces fly off it regularly enough, the city has to close streets. Any argument that is made that this is a good faith owner who's trying to make the city safe and resolve the issue, I mean, was summed up by some of the city's arguments at the end, which is that this is a property that was a steal bought by an owner that never had an intention of redeveloping it, who can't find a person to buy it. And as it continues to deteriorate, that doesn't leave many options for the city other than to demolish it. Because if it were an historic structure that was on the hot list of development, it wouldn't be laying fallow for as long as it's been laying fallow.
No doubt. I mean, even with all the inurements, right, of historic tax credits and other tax credit opportunities, the math just hasn't worked. And the economy is moving in a direction that's not going to make the math work any better. So I think it's fair and easy to say that at least for the next 2 to 3, maybe 4 years, the math's not going to get any better. So the likelihood of finding someone to come in and be the knight in shining armor and do this contrary to the math. I mean, one thing about math, it's got no emotion. It is what it is. And if it ain't working, it's not going to work.
Well, and to your point, Newell, the other thing is that I really think if this were a clear, empty lot, there might be some interest. But part of what people don't understand is that if a structure is historic, it has some value, and I obviously support the historic tax credit and preservationism in general, but there also comes a point where the actual architectural design doesn't make sense for anything other than kind of a crappy office building. The actual way that the existing buildings are laid out is not the best use of the space. I mean, there are plenty of people. I've worked on projects in my private practice, Newell, where someone would come to an owner and say, hey, you've got this two-story building that you just purchased that's derelict. You could really put it back exactly the same way and save some money. And an owner will look at it and go, well, if I put it back the way it was, it'll just go out of business again. I have to put something different here. And I think when you're looking at Plaza Tower and its location, it is a prime piece of real estate, but no one wants to step into the shoes of this owner and do the same thing where you're stuck on a piece of property where the numbers don't work and the design doesn't work ever. I mean, it's really interesting, and not to go into a kind of an assessor conversation, but like we also have a problem in the city in that we have to really look at how we assess property, because we overassess people that are living in their properties and we underassess people like this and give them almost the benefit of paying little to no property tax on slum property they could sit on forever. This property should be valued. When people are sitting on slum property, Newell, it needs to be valued for what it could be versus them treating it as investment property that can fall on people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, look, I don't think that there's any malintent on anybody's part. I think everybody would love for this building to go back into the stream of commerce, right? We would be able to collect the appropriate taxes. It would create additional general sales taxes by bringing people to this location and them enjoying all that there is to offer throughout the market district there and spending their dollars. But how long does one have to wait? I think 22 years is way too long. I mean, just in my mind, you know, and I'm not trying to be insensitive to the developer or anybody else. I just think it's too long. I mean, it at some point, it's working to the detriment of the city. It's become an eyesore. You got the post office right there. You've got the rail station right there. You have new development right behind it, around it there. Obviously, just to make your point, the Archdiocese building right across the street, right, is being redeveloped. So it that made sense for redevelopment. And it will be more than what it will be right now without that building across the street. That I can promise you, right?
Right. And I mean, to your point, Newell, I think the issue that beyond the fact of like the fact it's an eyesore, beyond the fact it's dangerous, it's also just become kind of symbolic of the laissez-faire attitude of code enforcement previously in the city. You look at other commercial properties throughout the city that have fallen into disrepair, and what the complaint I've gotten so many times from businesses are, code enforcement came down on me like a ton of bricks because I had, you know, some burnt out lights on the front of my grocery store and Plaza Towers down there, and they're not paying anything. And I want to be very clear, up until about a year and a half ago, Newell, this blighted property in the middle of downtown, they weren't paying anything. The city only recently, and I really want to credit Mr. Davis, who's our new head of code enforcement, has only really gotten aggressive on Plaza Tower really in the last year. I mean, there was one instance, you'll appreciate this as a lawyer, where the city tried to drop a fine on Plaza Tower. I think it was for $2,000 or $3,000, Newell, for a blight. Plaza Tower challenged that fine in a lawsuit, and Newell, the city stopped fining the property because of pending litigation, and then the owners just didn't move the lawsuit. And that was like a year and a half, 2 year period where it was blighted. It had been fined once, and because the owner had filed a lawsuit that they didn't move, the city just didn't fine it anymore. Do you realize the precedent that would set with any owner in the entire city of New Orleans with a fine?
Sure. Absolutely.
Just file a lawsuit. Don't even do discovery. Just sit on it, and you're immune from all fines and fees.
Just look, I say take the same approach as parking tickets, because they're aggressive. I pay mine.
Yep.
I get them.
I mean,
you know, and first thing I do is I write out a check because I see a lot of booting going on out on the street. You know, and I mean, I didn't see any boots on that building. So if we're moving forward, I mean, obviously this is just one hurdle. I'm certain that there's going to be a lot more hurdles in front of you.
Well, I think the first step, obviously, we're waiting to see whether or not the owners take a devolutive appeal or a suspensive appeal, because obviously that'll affect our ability to move forward. I would say that if they decide, so for those of you in the audience, a devolutive appeal means I'm going to appeal it in normal time and the court will do what the court will do and we can move forward while it's pending. A suspensive appeal means they say, nope, you have to stop what you're doing and wait for us to appeal, that would require a bond. If they pursue a suspensive appeal, Newell, we are going to go as aggressively as possible to get as high a bond as possible, because obviously as they're going through the appellate process and they're holding up our ability to secure the building, we do not have it in our hands yet that this building is safe. And something that was mentioned in court, was mentioned in the press, is we have a real concern. For the lower building, it's got marble slabs attached to the building. We have no independent analysis that we can attest to that says all of that is properly secure. Those are immediate things that pose a life and safety risk. So if they choose to pursue a suspensive appeal, we're going to go to the hilt to make sure that it is a bond that protects the city and the citizens while that appeal is pending. Once that appeal process is run, and I mean, when you look at the decision that the judge laid down, he really did not give any wiggle room, Newell, for any argument. The bigger issue, and you can appreciate this as a lawyer, we didn't even get to the meat of the argument because the attorneys for the landowner filed the appeal too late. You get a 48-hour period for when you get a notice of demolition to appeal that, Newell, and they were outside 48 hours. So the judge let them put their other arguments on the record. But when he ruled in favor of the city, he said that they were outside that 48-hour window. Newell, I don't know how you win that on appeal. That's just math and time.
Yeah,
if 48 hours is 48 hours, and you missed 48 hours.
Only way is notice. Notice is deficient.
You'll find this very funny. So they made that argument that the city did not put the specific time on the notice. Now, that is not required anywhere in the law, but code enforcement, because they were very canny, the individual that put the notice on the building, they submitted in the record the dash cam footage of the guy driving from City Hall and posted it on the building and leaving. Also, and the judge cited this as well, allegedly, they have 24-hour security around the perimeter of the building at all times. Well, if you've got a secure building, how did someone meander up on the building and post a sign and the person not catch it for hours? If he's supposed to be aggressively doing the perimeter to make sure that the homeless or thrill seekers don't get in the building. So, I mean, the judge threw out all those arguments, throughout the argument of they were entitled to have it to the minute how much time they had. He also threw out the argument, they said that they were entitled for counsel to be notified. When you've got an emergency declaration for imminent danger to the public, there is no requirement that we go on the owner's time and gently ask his lawyers, hey, can you work with us? The city's been doing that song and dance, Newell, for years. The city's been trying to work with the lawyers and the owner for years. And I think at this point, the public is just tired of it. The citizens of the city are
promise you, I had a friend that worked in code enforcement in Manhattan many years ago. He's retired now. I can tell you this would not happen. It would not happen. You start having parts of the building falling down, you will have a heap of folks coming on that building with all kinds of safety and preventive measures. And how many times have y'all closed the streets around this building? I mean, that should be evidence enough. How much inconvenience do the taxpayers have to suffer as a result thereof, right?
Well, Newell, I'll add you one better, and they said this, and I've said it repeatedly in public. Not only do we have to close the streets, the owner has not reimbursed us for the street closures. We charge people money if they want to close the street. So if you want to close the street in front of your house we have to close the streets whenever there's a high wind for purposes of parts falling off this building. And it's not like the owner's running over and saying, hey, I'm sorry for that convenience that everyone had to be rerouted around Julia and O'Keefe and their surrounding neighborhoods in the middle of downtown. Nope. It's just, that's what we have to take it on the chin using taxpayer dollars, taxpayer resources to make sure this building doesn't fall on people in part. And I mean, we can't even recover the money for it.
Do y'all file a lien on the building?
We have, at this point with our new code enforcement, we have a plethora of liens pending against the building. And I think part of the movement you saw, Newell, was that the original our initial assessment is about $2.7 million. I don't think that they were concerned about us demolishing the building. They were concerned about an initial $2.7 million lien being on that property.
We'll move them to a judgment debtor rule.
I think that's where it's going to, if I had to guess.
I mean, I'm not trying to be a you know what, but I mean, it is what it is. I mean, you know, the city needs to take advantage of every legal process that they have relative to resolving this. I mean, it's the only way you're going to move this off a dead center, right? I mean, I don't know what it's going to cost the demo. What is it, $10 million?
Oh, no. We have right now we have allocated $28 million for demo. I don't think it's going to cost that, but I think that the city was prudent in saying this $28 million is the worst case scenario. But, I mean, it'll be it'll easily be $10 to $15 million demo that building. You're right.
Yeah. I mean, it's not y'all's fault that they made a bad land deal. I mean, it's not like y'all have stood in the way of this becoming something different. I mean, I think everybody, going back to what I said before, would love it to have it go back into the stream of commerce, but I just don't see that happening. I think we've run out of time here. JP, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
Thanks, Noel. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. Stay with us, folks. So just a reminder, we'll have coverage of the inauguration, the 47th president, on Monday. They are moving it inside. The temperature is supposed to be 11 degrees, wind chill lower than that. I was just reading an update as to our weather. It looks as though the conditions are leaning more and more to some precipitation that we're not used to. Now, I don't know about you, but I can just tell you, every time I've been on the roads here where there's freezing rain, icy conditions, or snow, the last place you want to be is on the road. I recall, I'm trying to remember what year it was, we had a family dinner uptown at Commander's Palace. We were celebrating something. It may have been my sister's birthday, because she's a Christmas birthday. And I remember trying to get home from that event on Jefferson Highway, and it looked like I was in the middle of a pinball machine, people bouncing off of one another, sliding across the highway, have no clue how to drive in the snow. It was like they were on another planet, and I'll never forget that. All I did was go very slow and tried to stay out of people's way because they were sliding all over the place. That's not where you want to be. That I can promise you. So I'm sure this will get, as we get closer, we'll get more definitive answers, but a lot of the meteorologists are saying the conditions are getting better for that to happen. They're lining up, so we'll see. Some folks says, what happens after the demolition? Just a vacant lot where the homeless set up their tents? Hopefully not. I don't think so. They'll be able to put that piece of land back into the stream of commerce, obviously. Either way, whether it's a landowner or otherwise, or take measures to make it secure. But we shall see. All right, we got to get back to a break. When we come back, we'll visit with Ian Hoke, who's in for Scoot. Stay with us. Hope you enjoyed today's show, folks. We covered a lot of territory, from the Super Bowl to what's going on in Southeast Asia and South Korea, insurance here, keeping an eye on what's happening in California as well. And Ian Hoke joins us. What do we have coming up, Ian?
Hey, Noel, we're going to talk to jazz trumpeter and composer Terrence Blanchard. He's doing a piece with the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra this weekend that I think is going to be exceptional and special. We'll keep an eye on the weather. We'll bring you some updates from the National Weather Service. I think it's getting to be pretty dang important that we do that. And then in the 3 o'clock hour, we'll hear from Matthew in Ukraine, the Scoot on the Air Ukraine correspondent. He's going to give us a call from the front lines and give us an update from there. Good stuff. Stick around.
Sounds like great stuff coming your way, folks, on a Friday evening. It's free-for-all Friday. Stay tuned. Ian's up next. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.